Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Wilmington Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, this is Ann Revelle-Petcher, your host of Wilmington Business Radio, and I'm excited to have in the studio today two people that run nonprofit organizations here in town, both of which impact the Wilmington that we live in every single day. We have first from Kids Making It, which is a really exciting program that many people still haven't even heard of. We have Jimmy Pierce, the founder and executive director. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, Ann. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, it's so great to have you.
Having me, rather.
Yeah, it's
so
great to have you.
Two of us here.
And George Edwards, we have the executive director of the Historic Wilmington Foundation. Welcome, George.
Thank you, Ann. Nice to be here.
I think I'm going to start this discussion chronologically, and let's start with history. We're going to start okay. Where Wilmington started way back a long time ago. It, what, 1700s was kind of the heyday of its buzz?
The city, which we're celebrating our 275th anniversary right now, was established, incorporated in 1739. There were actually towns that predate the incorporation of Wilmington. There was Newtown. There was New Liverpool. There was New Carthage. And, of course, all of those were predated by Brunswick Town down the river. So this area has been settled by European settlers for a long time. And, of course, there were Indians here long, long before Europeans ever ventured here.
Of course. But your task at the Historic Wilmington Foundation is really what?
Well, our mission, which I think is very succinct and to the point, says to protect and preserve the irreplaceable historic resources of Wilmington and the Lower Cape Fear region. And to that end, for 48 plus years, we have tried to be a voice for and an educator for preserving our heritage, our architectural heritage. We feel that it's part of the real culture of the city to protect and preserve and recycle our historic resources, of which we are fortunate to have quite a few in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Wilmington has 7 National Register districts. So often in Wilmington, people refer to the historic district, and they're talking about downtown. But in addition to that district, which is formerly the Wilmington National Register District, there are 6 others scattered throughout the core of the city, as well as out at Masonboro Sound. And those districts collectively have more than 6,000 historic, officially recognized historic buildings. And I think that that's an incredible resource. We have been about the business of preservation in this city, formally been about the business of preservation, since the city incorporated an architectural review board in 1962 and set about the review and approval for architectural change. And then hot on the heels of that effort, the foundation is organized in 66 to be a nonprofit partner, but also to do things on our own, which have been an awful lot of real estate. We have bought and sold buildings, and we protect many of our buildings with preservation easements and old-fashioned covenants, now protecting 90 buildings across the city. We've educated property owners. We put our money in and restored buildings ourselves and then rotated them out with a revolving fund. And we appear as a political advocate, if you will, before all the elected bodies in the region. And I say the region because we feel like our service region includes Pender and Brunswick County.
Oh, that's interesting.
And we have members in both of those areas. And we have gone to bat for resources. For instance, the former Topsail High School, which is now, if you've seen in the newspaper, is being restored by Pender County as a service facility for the county. They were bound and determined to tear that down about 6 years ago.
Oh,
and we raised the question, could it not be a better use for that building to keep it? There's no pressure to take it down, but people sometimes say, well, it's not in use, let's take it down. Let's see if there can't be a use found. And with some council members or commission members starting to listen, they made a vote last year to save the building, and now they're pouring, I think, about $3 million into the restoration of that building for use, which is great. That's keeping the heritage.
Yeah. Well, let's take a step back. It's 1962, it's 1966 in those early years. What was really the impetus?
The fact that the city was going to hell in a handbasket. I mean, truly.
Yeah?
Think about America in the 50s and 60s, and you have a great suburban push after World War II. All the veterans come home, there's not enough places to live, so developers being savvy say, let's build housing. That means building housing beyond the city core.
Certainly.
The American automobile is coming into prominence, and had been coming into prominence since the 30s and 40s, which allows us to move further out. So mm-hmm. you begin to see suburbanization. Hanover Center, 1958.
Oh, is that right?
So you're pulling business away from downtown, and downtown was deteriorating. So many American cities have struggled with that. We had multi-family situations with a lot of the larger houses. You had property values plummeting. You had unsavory uses in some cases, frankly, very unsavory uses in our buildings downtown. And I have been told that the teenagers of the 60s were told by their parents, don't you dare ever go downtown. If I hear you go downtown, you're in trouble, because it wasn't a safe place to be. And in the face of that, the community saw value in its old neighborhoods. They saw value in recycling. There were, fortunately, some property owners who were some of our early founders who said, mm-hmm. we're not going to abandon this. We've made an investment here. This is our family. This is our home. This is our business. And so with advocates like the foundation stepping in to become a voice for preservation, churches that wanted to be anchors downtown remaining and making a commitment to reinvest in their buildings, and then the city establishing a review board, an architectural review board in 62, we start to turn things around. And But think about that. 62 was 52 years ago. Mm-hmm. Things don't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But they have happened, and they have happened dramatically, with 7 National Register districts, soon to be an 8th, actually.
Oh, where's that going to be?
That would be Brookwood by 2015.
Oh, really? That's a lovely neighborhood.
And we've seen property values soar. We've seen direct investment. And when I say direct, the way to track that is just the tax credit, but we're going to try to get a handle on the indirect, which means people who don't use tax credits. Tax credit investment since 1979 in this city has seen $47 million of direct investment in this community.
That's
and 210 projects done.
That's great.
So preservation has become an economic engine in this community.
Absolutely.
And a quality of life issue.
Absolutely.
I would dare say that PPD, Corning, General Electric, no one brings a corporate client or a potential employee or CEO type figure here that they don't bring them downtown.
Well, it's a real draw for people. Anyone who's considering moving here, they don't move here just because there's a beach. There are a lot of beaches up and down the entire East Coast. There are
a lot
of beaches. And Wilmington offers that very special something. And a lot of it is based on the history.
People love to
see a horse-drawn carriage going by their house. That just adds, it's not just quaint, it's depth.
It does. It adds depth. The neighborhoods are mature. They're established. They have mature tree cover. And the price points of our historic neighborhoods range from the million-plus in the core of downtown to the cottages and bungalows of Carolina Heights and Carolina Place, which are appreciating nicely in value,
mm-hmm.
but where you can probably still buy into some of those neighborhoods at $200,000. And if you want some fixer-uppers, they're in the $100,000-plus range. So the city offers a lot of choice, and I think that's great. That's what preservation is all about.
Well, you do a lot more on a day-to-day basis down there in the office than save houses and save buildings. Some of the projects that you have coming up include what?
Well, on the horizon is our ever-popular, I think this is the 22nd year for our house tour.
Always great fun.
During the Azalea Festival, and it is a great opportunity for us to do a fun activity, but it's mission-driven, Anne. I mean,
absolutely.
What are you doing? You're showing people revitalization neighborhoods, you're showing diverse architecture, and beginning about 3 years ago, we blended in historic and historic church or synagogue, because people don't often venture into a church or a synagogue or a place of worship that's maybe not their own.
Right.
So here's a chance to see some interesting places. And that's a great two-day opportunity to explore and celebrate our heritage and what's going on in the city. That'll be followed very hard on the heels of that event with May, which is National Preservation Month, when we'll have some lectures and some tours, and we'll introduce, regretfully, we have to introduce our most threatened places list for the year. We'll have a celebration on the river, which is our Shrimparoo friend-raiser at the end of the month, and we're going to do a tour of Rosenwald Schools in Pender County, which have been on our threatened places list. And then we'll be planning for other activities that are out there, the 5K, which is a run through downtown. Comes up in September, and a vintage event that comes up in the fall, And then I'm already remiss in that I've missed our new guided walking tours, our architectural walking tours.
I was just going to ask about that. I actually think I saw those first running. Was it 2 years ago? How long has it been?
Well,
been doing
we tested them 2 years ago. You're okay. Right. But we started them on a regular schedule every week on Saturdays and during the heart of the summer on Wednesdays, a guided tour through the streetcar neighborhoods of Carolina Place, Carolina Heights, and then Forest Hills, which is our first automobile-oriented suburb. And those drew a very enthusiastic audience last year, and we're back second year. And then one of my favorite programs, because you have to build for the future, and we're building for the future now with our sixth year of the Tar Heels Go Walking program.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit. Talk about who your target is there.
Well, the target is a collaboration between the foundation and the New Hanover County's public school system and three other partners who are sites that we visit, the Wilmington Fire Department, Thalian Hall, and the Public Library. And so we lead the tour, 3.5-hour commitment on the part of a guide, leads the tour from the fire department down Market to North Third, to Chestnut, to Front, to Princess, to the river. And the target is a third-grade student and their parents who come along as volunteers and the teacher. And our amazing statistics, and I'm really proud of these statistics, we've taken 12,000 children, 1,000 parents, and 500 teachers on this tour in the last 5 years.
And they walk for 3 hours?
And they walk for 3.5 hours, and they get introduced to architecture, the changing American city, public art, and just they become observers of the built environment, and we teach them some new architectural terms, and we teach them to look at the environment and think about it differently.
That's excellent.
And those kids, some of those kids are going to be the leaders of the next generation.
Absolutely.
And they're going to be our members, and they're going to be the people who say, wait a minute, history and heritage is important. Let's not let it go away.
Absolutely. Oh, that's fabulous. I'm so glad to hear about that. You know, one of the things I referred to earlier with the horse-drawn carriage tours, I noticed they come by our house all the time, of course, and they talk about all of the house. We live on such an interesting block. There's something to talk about at every stop. But all of us, of course, have plaques, except one, two now, because they're just made to look old, but they're not old, is the plaque program. And tell us about the plaque program and what it means, not just to the people who have the plaques on their homes and to the people who walk by, but to you as an organization and to the city.
Well, I think the plaque program formally acknowledges, of course, history and the sites that the plaques adorn. The plaque program is quite old. It was established, I think, about 68. There are now more than 600 plaques approved and hung, and there are three varieties, if you will. 75 to 99 years is the burgundy or red plaque. Black, which is the one that everybody covets for their house, is 100 years old and older. And then if you go out to the beaches, we established a plaque for the beaches, which was just for 50 years of age, because the beaches, unfortunately, have seen so much ebb and flow of the communities and the buildings. They've been torn down. They've been
hurricanes
and fires. But even there, we have some plaques. And actually, I aired. There's really a fourth plaque right out here outside this office. There's a plaque on one of the alleys. And we have four alley plaques, which are a joint venture between the foundation, the city, the residents of Old Wilmington, and Wilmington downtown. Different agencies partner with us to put those plaques up. The plaques, I think, are a wonderful marker for a house or a building. And what they do is they describe the architecture very succinctly. They tell you if we know who the builder was. And they give you, in the case of a business or a home, they give you a very small but very well-crafted statement about who the owners were who built the house, who envisioned this building being here, who made a very major commitment to build a building, to say that I want to be part of this community and I'm putting my feet down in this community, I'm making this investment. And it's a wonderful little peephole into the history of a house. And I think it excites people when they walk up and down the street because they get a richer sense of this community. And they can understand that there have been seamstresses and entrepreneurs and bankers and farmers and other and shop owners who've made that commitment to the city because we celebrate that on the plaque. And the plaques have been on the houses of the very wealthy and on the plain houses. They've been on the homes of Caucasian residents in the city, as well as African Americans. They've celebrated, in some of the cases, they celebrate the work of enslaved people when they were architects and builders in the city before the Civil War and the Emancipation. The plaques are wonderful, and I say commercial buildings and residences, but they're plaques on churches.
Uh-huh.
There's plaques at the cemetery.
Oh.
And there's one streetcar station, old streetcar station from the old Tidewater Beach Line, that has a plaque, too, out in the Audubon neighborhood. So they're all over the place, and great celebration, great touchstones, I think, to history. And they mean so much locally.
Yeah.
We get calls all the time from people saying, well, I have a plaque. Does that mean I can't paint my house white? The plaque has no official status. The plaque simply officially recognizes the history of the house and the people who made the commitment to put that building there.
Well, that does raise a question for me about the difference if someone were to get a house that did need to be remodeled and needed a little bit of
work,
revitalization of its own. Is that something that people clear through you or through the city? How does that work?
Well, there's a lot of confusion, and I guess that's just the nature of the business, and I've done this business for 28 years. We're a nonprofit group, which means that we don't have any formal small p police power. That power is, of course, vested in local government.
Mm-hmm.
The only place we can truly control the future of a building, and I mentioned earlier the easements and the covenants, that's an agreement, a written legal agreement that says that you are going to make certain concessions to the foundation to observe the building. But we can advise, and we do. We can cajole, and we do a lot of that. We lobby, and we do that. But the city, through its HPC, in two of the city's historic districts, does have the power to review and comment about change. Now, we have to say that those regulations are established not by the city. It's not top-down. It's bottom-up. When those districts were established, all the citizens, through public hearings and processes, developed those regulations and agreed that they were going to live by those regulations.
Oh,
and then they vest that power for review in a citizen commission that is open to anybody to apply for. And by law in North Carolina, that citizen commission, which is our Historic Preservation Commission, has to be composed of about five or six different skill sets. So you're going to get a very balanced and multifaceted review and evaluation of a change to a building. And I think it only enhances value. I think people sometimes look at it as detracting or making life difficult, but it doesn't. What it does is allow for orderly change. And historic districts and preservation never argue that we freeze things in place. We're not Williamsburg. We're not Old Salem,
mm-hmm.
where you go for a specific experience. We're a vital community that's growing and changing and evolving, but we're respecting history and we're incorporating that history and preservation into our everyday life, and that's what we have to allow for.
Great. If people wanted to become involved with the foundation,
would love it.
What are the ways that they can get involved?
Well, like any member-based organization, of course, we're always open to members, and you can find that membership form on our website, historicwilmington.org. But we've got committees, and we have approximately seven or eight different committees, and that information is also on the website. And we're always looking for committee volunteers. But we've got some unique opportunities. I mentioned earlier Tar Heels and the guided walking tours.
Mm-hmm.
We need trained guides. We're recruiting right now for guides, and we're going to start training for the walking tours next month. We're looking for guides. Give me a call. Shoot me an email. And one of our huge needs every year is the Azalea Festival Home Tour. We use 150 volunteers.
Oh, wow. As docents.
As docents for the house. And it takes a little bit of training commitment. We put people through about a 2.5-3 hour training session before we put them out there in the house, because we want them to give a fair and informed explanation of the building, not
mm-hmm.
to say, oh, this is an old house. It's more than that. And we want them to be the eyes and the ears of the owner, too, because the owner has entrusted that property in our hands for 2 days.
Right.
And we want to be good stewards of their house as we show it off. So there's an opportunity. The foundation could not survive without volunteers. And in any given year, with all of our committees and all of those opportunities I've been alluding to, we have anywhere from 300 to 400 people every year volunteering to help make preservation a fact of life
in
this community.
Well, it is such an important part of what Wilmington is and about the spirit that lives in this town. So
absolutely.
Thank you so very much for your work.
Oh,
appreciate
thank you
it.
For having me here.
I want to go into the next generation here for a minute here. Jimmy,
Yes.
Would you please tell me more about that cool little woodworking studio down near the waterfront?
Sure.
I would love to know how Kids Making It came to be.
It was actually just kind of an inspiration that happened when my son, who's now 25 and teaching first grade, when he was about 6 months old.
Oh.
Having a kid just kind of rocked my world, and I was practicing law.
It does that, doesn't it?
Yeah, oh my God. sent me for a loop, and I've never recovered. But I was practicing law, doing very well at that. And but just once I had a child, I started thinking about, you know, midlife crisis started happening, and just thinking, well, what could I do in this world that might be more meaningful to me than being a lawyer? And woodworking was what I loved to do. And it was about 2 a.m. on a late night car drive through Georgia when I thought, boy, if I could do anything, I'd do woodworking. Oh. And it took me about 5 minutes to realize I could never do it for a living. I'm too much of a perfectionist and not that good anyway. But I somehow thought then maybe I could work with kids. And so it took a few years to gel. But starting in 94, I started taking time away from my law practice to work with kids. And then did that in various ways for many years, and did the pilot program at Gervais, the public housing neighborhood.
Okay.
The old Gervais before they tore it down in 97, and then started full time in 2000 working with kids. So we work with any kid who is at risk of juvenile delinquency, and that is a very wide
net,
I would assume. As you can imagine, yeah. Lots of kids.
Well, let's actually take a step back and
sure.
Let's formalize the description of what Kids Making It is. What's your mission?
Our mission is to work with at-risk kids, teach them woodworking and vocational skills, and through that model to help empower them to stay in school, mm-hmm. graduate, mm-hmm. and go on to jobs or college and become contributing members of society. That's it in sort of a nutshell.
And you target what age of kids?
We work with kids from around 7 years old all the way through early adulthood.
And is it mostly, I hate to ask the gender sure. question, but is it mostly boys doing this?
It mostly is, but not entirely. Historically, it's been... in the younger grades, it's more evenly mixed. Uh-huh. I find that somehow when we get into our teenagers program, it's more guys who come around to do it than girls. But nevertheless, it's still like two-thirds, one-third, something like that.
And tell me what it's like. Are they there at us an after-school program mm-hmm. during summer? What's
sure.
your...
It's different for the younger kids. Mm-hmm. We do introductory woodworking classes and camps. And they get to come in for a session, you learn to use a saw and a cordless drill maybe, or a hammer and a nail and put together a birdhouse or a bookcase, or come to a summer camp and build a go-kart. We do go-kart summer camps where kids build kind of soapbox derby cars. We are now up in the Pender County schools in a collaboration with the YMCA, teaching 1 week camps to elementary school kids there doing small bookcases, that sort of thing. Our teenagers is a long-term mentoring entrepreneurship program, and that's what happens every day. In fact, we're open 7 days a week down at 15 South Water Street. And in that shop, we have really complete power tool shop.
Wow.
All the machines and tools, all the equipment that you could need to build anything.
So that space must go back a ways. It's more than the front that
yes,
we see right
Yes, it does,
there.
Yes. The front is, if you walk in, there's a retail shop, and that's the entrepreneurship piece. We let our kids sell anything and everything they make if they want to. Most of them want to.
What kinds of things do they make?
Well, one of the big sellers are these pens, and I'll show you one. I know we don't have a TV camera, but they make a really nice hardwood pen that takes a cross refill, and we guarantee it for life.
Wow, these are beautiful pens. We'll have to put a picture of them on our website.
Oh, okay.
How about that?
That'd be great.
They're gorgeous. They're a dark, beautiful wood with lovely lines and engraved.
And engraved. This one happens to be engraved. It's actually for it's for someone else, and I've been carrying it around since it's been made for about a week. I need to give it to him. But
Jeff.
Oh. Yeah, Jeff. I'll call you later, Jeff, and tell you I'm bringing it to you. But it's And that's a great example of the entrepreneurship piece. All the profits go to the kids who sell their items. We have about $5 in the parts for the pen,
okay,
including the wood. And that pen that I've just shown you would sell for probably $25. And our kids who learn to make those, and they all do, can make that pen in 15 or 20 minutes.
Is that right?
And earn $20 on that pen.
Wow.
They sure can. And but they do birdhouses and bookcases and butterfly houses and dog bowl sets.
That's a real compelling argument. I mean, it's certainly a whole lot more fun to do that than to sell drugs.
Well, I would think so. I mean, I've never sold drugs.
I think it sounds more fun.
But,
let me make this clear. I haven't either, but just so that we clarify that.
We can do a show of hands here. But, my initial thought was that, wow, I just really love woodworking. And this was, 25 years ago when I thought that. And if I love it so much, it makes me feel good about myself. Maybe the same would be true for kids. And so that was the whole genesis. And it really does work. It teaches patience and perseverance. And,
sure. How many kids are in the entrepreneurship program right now?
We serve like 60 to 80 a year through in the teenagers.
Good.
We over 300 kids total every year. I think this year we're going to serve 350 or so.
Wow. How do they find out about you?
Well, a lot of them find out through word of mouth and come. I mean, for years it was exclusively the kids in all the public housing neighborhoods. The first grant I had was to work with those kids, and it was all hand tools.
Hmm.
And lots of go-karts were built by the kids in Creekwood and Houston Moore and all the neighborhoods. So a lot of the siblings, the younger brothers and sisters of the kids I started working with back in 2000, 97, are coming to us now. But we get referrals from the schools, from the juvenile courts, from community service providers, lots of people.
Is this the apprenticeship program also?
No, the apprenticeship program is something we started a couple of years ago. We have our annual evaluations done by a faculty member of the UNCW School of Social Work.
Oh, is that right?
And they've helped guide what we do over the years. And from the very beginning, they kept saying, Jimmy, if you really want to make a difference in the kids' life, you have to spend more time with them than one afternoon a week for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And that was the original model. So I kept lengthening the course, until finally I just started telling the kids, we're with you forever. You walk in the door, you fill out the application, we accept you into the program, come as long as you want. And, and that worked really, really well. We've had kids come for years and years. But then we realized the reality hit us in the face a couple of years ago when we had a number of kids who had graduated from high school, but just in this difficult economy, could not find a job.
Sure.
And they kept hanging around Kids Making It, and we weren't going to kick them out. And they kept teaching the other kids and volunteering and making stuff. And so we thought, let's start a program where we can start taking on custom orders for the public, large production orders.
Interesting.
And use it as a job training opportunity for them. And bring them on to do work as we get jobs. And our thought was this would give them, it'd be a resume building thing, a job skills training opportunity. They can learn really working to a standard, quality control, punctuality. We bought a time clock for the first time, just to have a time clock so they could punch a time clock.
Oh, wow.
And so they do that.
There must be an app for that.
There probably is. I could probably do it on, I mean, they could probably find it and do it on the phones. But so we're doing things like something else I brought along was along with the pins, and we have these really nice...
I'm opening a gorgeous...
Yes.
Is this maple?
There's a maple box. Very good.
This is a beautiful maple box that has the pen inside of it. And they're stunning. This is something that someone could order as a what I would call a tchotchke for their giving away at events or to their important customers. But you also sell these kinds of things right in the waterfront, the Water Street store as well?
We do. And our teenagers can, of course, take that box and laser engrave it for you personally.
Uh-huh.
I brought this one because I wanted to show you this is something the apprenticeship team is doing right now. We have an order for 150 pens from Hill International, which is a construction litigation firm in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
So we'll be finishing these and shipping them to Chicago.
That's interesting. Now, how did they find you?
Actually, one of our volunteers has a connection with them. And
nice.
Talked to them, showed them. He was really taken by what we do, sent them a pen, said, I think you guys should order some of these. And they said, we'd love to. So we're working now on also a line of custom engraved, laser engraved earrings. One of our production machines is a laser engraver. And we've got someone who's repping our products at various gift shops. And
these are wooden?
These are wooden, laser engraved.
Laser engraved. The one that he handed me has the Frying Pan Shoals Lighthouse actually engraved right into it. And they're such a unique gift.
Right. We've got, and they really are, and we can do all kinds of designs. They can be custom crafted for the...
Well, we're going to have to get a video camera out to put up with this.
Okay. Well, anyway, we've got... orders, I think, in 17 gift shops, the National Park gift shops.
Oh, that's great.
In North Carolina to do a
whole
lighthouse.
And did I hear also
series.
That they're all on Castle Street, they're available? Or?
Yes, we have a space over in the Urban Revival.
Isn't that great?
Building on Castle Street, we sure do. So we are, the other side of the whole apprenticeship thing is we're, of course, moving kids into the private sector after mm-hmm. they've had some experience with us. In fact, I got a call. Just last week from the owner of a cabinet shop here in town that's looking for up to two people.
Oh, that's great.
So we're going to recommend some folks to him.
Now you're a job counseling center, too.
A job counseling center, sure. Well, absolutely.
Part of the whole thing.
The other part of it, though, is that as a nonprofit, I mean, I felt so humbled listening to George talk about all the events they're doing, which will be helping to raise money for the foundation, which is awesome. But he and I share the same underlying mission every day, which is finding the money to keep going.
Absolutely.
And so this apprenticeship program is a sort of social enterprise for us, and our goal for it is to help us be ultimately fully sustainable. Mm. We've got a hydraulic copy lathe, which will do turned flower vases and spindles and things, baseball bats, a computer numerically controlled router, which will cut out flat parts one after another, and, of course, these the laser engravers that we have. So we're looking for large production orders for corporate clients and agencies.
And again, this has such texture and life to it because it's wood. It was once alive. You know, I was thinking as you were talking about 3D printers and the move to 3D printers.
Right.
And I'm actually thinking how training in something like this that is as real and vibrant could actually probably help kids who want to go into that kind of environment.
Sure.
Think those kinds of things because they're learning space. They're learning about how the computer affects the ability to print out these earrings, for example.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. And it is. I mean, our laser engraver is computer driven. The CNC router is. The hydraulic copy lathe is not. But talking about the wood and the texture, this first pen I showed you was made from the original teak decking from the battleship from 1939.
You're kidding.
I'm serious. So, you
know. So, do they work with reclaimed wood often?
Sure,
really?
We do. Right. And so, you know, sometimes we'll have somebody come in and say, we've got an old tobacco barn on our property. Could you make something for us? And a very easy thing is to make a set of pens and pencils or something.
Certainly.
Because it takes so little wood to do it.
That's exciting. How does the community get involved with what you're doing? Or how could the community get involved?
Well, we, of course, as George is, as the foundation does, the Historic Wilmington Foundation, we use volunteers as well. Not as many and not in as many ways, but we use volunteers in our shop to help teach the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Always looking for volunteers to help us with things like our fundraisers. We do an annual event in the summer, the Hippie Ball. And so we're now. And
tell us about the hippie ball.
With hippie ball, boy, it's I think it's the best party of the summer. But but we get a great band who does all the music from the 60s and 70s and on up from, Jimi Hendrix forward. And we open up the Brooklyn Arts Center. We bring in some huge lava lamps and we show Woodstock on the back wall. It's running throughout the whole thing. And we just have a lot of fun. People dress up.
Everybody's in tie-dyed.
Absolutely. And we give out prizes for the best dressed hippies and the best dancers. And so it's our annual fundraiser. And so we're going to do that in June. So we're looking for volunteers to help us put that party together.
Excellent.
Right now, for example.
That sounds like great fun.
Yeah.
Well, I'm coming down. I'm going to come down and take a look.
Good.
It seems like something that it's always changing. There's always something new down there. Very great idea. Fabulous idea. Thank you for not being a lawyer anymore and for doing this instead. You're really helping the next generation of Wilmington get a foundation. So
thanks
to you.
Thank you.
To both of you, I appreciate you coming here and sharing with all of us what things that are helping to make Wilmington just a great place to live.
And, it is a great place.
And frankly, a great place to do business.
Sure.
You're both helping
Absolutely.
To keep this a great place to do business. If somebody wants to learn more, Jimmy, how do they find you?
It's kidsmakingit.org is our website. 15 South Water Street is our address. 763-6001 is our phone number.
Excellent. And George, how do they get in touch with the foundation?
Well, they can walk in 2011 Market Street. We have a unique headquarters in the National Cemetery, but it's a very historic site. They can call us at 910-762-2511, or they can go online, historicwilmington.org. We also have a Facebook page, and we have a Twitter account, too, so they can get to us lots of ways.
Well, we'll tweet at you guys later on.
Thank you so much.
And this is Anne Ravel-Petcher for Wilmington Business Radio. Until next time.